She's a real woman with a real life. She's someone you can relate to. Dawn Newton.
Welcome to the Dawn Newton Podcast. I am your host, Dawn Newton. Joining me today is Dr. Michelle Jackson, naturopathic physician here in Bend, Oregon. Today, we're tackling the topic that affects millions of people, but often goes unnoticed: chronic inflammation. Unlike the short-term swelling and redness we see when we sprain an ankle or cut a finger, chronic inflammation works silently in the background. Over time, it can play a major role in conditions like heart disease, diabetes, arthritis, and even cognitive decline. Dr. Jackson's going to help us understand what's really happening inside the body, and more importantly, what we can do about it.
Dr. Michelle Jackson, it's great to talk with you again. You're back in studio. We're talking today about inflammation, chronic inflammation, acute inflammation. It's really an interesting topic. When we hear about talking about inflammation, what that really means, and I think we're going to do, or you're going to do, a deeper dive talking about that internal inflammation, that we kind of, that sleeping, potentially a little time bomb that goes on within our bodies.
So that's a great image there, because the information coming out, there's more and more, I think, general information out into the public of so many diseases. There's at least a component of chronic inflammation, if not the cause. And I'm talking about all kinds of diseases, dementia, cardiovascular, et cetera. So, yes, this is a great topic to talk about.
And when we think about inflammation, I mean, I think maybe the most common, or what comes to mind for me, is like when you sprain an ankle and you can see the redness or the swelling, it hurts. You may need to seek medical attention, rest, all the things, you know, a bee sting, things like that we can visually see. Yeah. But then there's that chronic inflammation, too, that I don't think we talk that much about. I mean, the difference between acute versus chronic, how would you define that?
And it really is this chronic inflammation that we're realizing is the driver, or at least, again, an ingredient, a culprit of a lot of chronic diseases. But yeah, you hit the nail on the head with like acute inflammation. If we think about, we step on a nail or sprain our ankle, our immune system gets activated, and you need that. Your body needs to fight that. But again, it's an infection, injury, and you think about that, you know, red, hot, swelling, painful area, and your body needs that. Your immune system goes, ooh, I've got to acutely deal with this injury. So what happens with that acute process is the immune system gets activated, but it's only supposed to be temporary. And then what happens when we've got this chronic inflammation is this low level inflammation that maybe we can't see. It could be, you know, internal. Our immune system is not supposed to be on all the time like that. And that, you know, that causes the issue. One example that people might be able to visualize is, you know, if you've got, say you start scratching your hand. And if you keep scratching and scratching, that area becomes red, inflamed, swollen. That is acute inflammation. And what happens is the immune system, though, if you stop scratching it, that tissue, your skin, by, you know, a few hours later, it will probably look like normal tissue and the cells will repair itself. But if you keep scratching and scratching, or say that injury is internal where you can't see it, that the cell repair might not be with healthy, normal cells, because the immune system is not supposed to be turned on and activated constantly. But we can't see that. So much of that, you know, is internal, where we can't see. We don't really know that it's going on.
It's kind of interesting when I visualize, is, you know, we talk about how our nervous system can be in fight or flight when we have these external stressful things going on, divorce, death, a job. I mean, it's hard. I mean, the list goes on and on. But to think about our immune system being in constant kind of fight or flight.
Yeah.
We know the toll it takes on us emotionally, but that internal toll, that can cause havoc as well.
Absolutely. I think once we become aware of it, of that possibly there's some inflammation, or I think as society, hopefully we're getting more aware of this. Like, so much of us, and I'm guilty of this too, is like continuing going. And then if I really sit back and maybe assess how my body is feeling. I might be like, oh, you know, my joints are kind of swollen, or I'm fatigued. That could be due to chronic inflammation. But many times to have the, it sounds silly, but the time to sit back and actually think about how we're feeling, we're not always as good as a society at doing that.
You know, and looking at inflammation too, we can look at the lifestyle component to it, things that we're doing that we don't realize we're maybe doing or need to reevaluate that are contributing to inflammation. But is there a genetic component to it?
There definitely can be. It's actually kind of fascinating. There's more and more research coming out about genetic testing, and there are some genetics and markers that you can look at in your bloodstream that are associated with chronic inflammatory diseases like celiac disease, which most people are aware of. That's when people, if they eat gluten or wheat, not just the sensitivity. I mean, their intestinal system can get destroyed, and they're more prone to different kind of GI cancers. There are some genetic pieces that you can test for, and that seem, and it seems like these genes, they affect how well or how dysregulated the immune system responds to, like, say, a pathogen. But some autoimmune diseases like rheumatoid arthritis, Crohn's disease, there's this HLA gene that you can test in the blood and see if you have that genetically. So there's more and more testing for some specific diseases, but just because you have that genetic, you know, that genetic marker, I don't believe that it predisposes you to always get the disease. There's this whole new category called epigenetics, and epigenetics are environmental, and that includes behavioral processes that you can do as a person that then can influence your genes. So for example, a lot of your family has celiac disease, and you know that, oh, I might be a candidate, and you test that whether you have the celiac disease genetic marker. Well, if you never eat gluten, you won't develop celiac disease. So just because you've got these genetic markers doesn't always mean you're going to go down that pathway, but it takes lifestyle changes to affect some of that.
There was a quote that it started in our talking points that I was like, ooh, this really hits home, or really kind of gives that little cup of cold water in your face, where you wrote, genetics loads the gun, but lifestyle pulls the trigger.
Yeah.
Which I think that's just what you just said. If you don't ever eat gluten, you may never have the celiac disease, even though your family's prone to it.
Right. And now I forget, when I was doing research on this as well, if this came directly from this Danish twin study. There's a lot, they studied these, you know, twins. I think most of them were maybe separated at birth, though they had, and they were identical twins, so they have the exact same genetics. But then, you know, they were studying the different diseases that they developed and assessed, you know, lifestyle choices, et cetera. And it did seem to be, even though they had the exact same genetics, if there were maybe some better lifestyles, so say there was less stress, or they, you know, were able to eat better, that they didn't, you know, develop some of these chronic diseases. So I really do think our lifestyle, you know, environmental factors, maybe even talking about toxins and pollutants, et cetera, that they will affect our genetic expression.
And talk too about what a list be of chronic, you know, when chronic inflammation turns into a disease, like, where do we see that? What's most commonly known?
Oh my gosh. So, you know, the list goes on and on. I mean, one, a very easy thing that I think most people, you know, can relate to is arthritis, which is inflammation, you know, in your joint. Obviously can be due to wear and tear. You know, you wear down the cartilage between, you know, between your joints, that will cause arthritis. But I think most people maybe can relate to this. Like, most people feel like they might have a food trigger that they know, like, they might know if, like, ooh, if I eat too much sugar or dairy, that they get inflammation in their joint. Their joints might be, you know, feel tighter or more painful. That's arthritis, and that's due to chronic inflammation from maybe this food that they're not processing very well. But other conditions with chronic inflammation might be asthma, all sort of cardiovascular diseases, especially lacking from high cholesterol when there's calcium plaques. That can be due to inflammation in your arteries. There's some information showing that, I think this gets a little bit more complicated, but has to do also with blood sugars, but dementia, neurological diseases definitely seem to have a chronic inflammation component. Cancers, autoimmune diseases, that's an easy one. I think that there's a lot of conditions can be linked back to chronic inflammation.
What's sad, but also very eye-opening, is that how long the list is.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's not just three or four things. It's like, no, the list is pretty long of what chronic inflammation, and how long does inflammation need to be chronic before you start seeing the disease or, you know, the long-term negative effects?
That would probably, I don't have a specific, answer to that. A lot of that depends on kind of these other factors. Like if you almost think about a scale, and on one side of like an old-fashioned scale, and one side of the scale is everything that you're doing to reduce inflammation. So say you're eating well, but then on the other side of the scale, you're not getting enough sleep. Okay, right now they're equal. But then if you put on the negative side of the scale some chronic stress, then the scale gets tipped towards pro-inflammation. So really, it's the whole picture, how much you're doing. Really, lifestyle just comes back to a big part of it.
It is that lifestyle piece of it. I mean, it seems like everything comes back to lifestyle, our choices that we're making. The real root cause is us, which isn't meant to be a negative statement, but a reality.
Definitely. There's definitely a lot of things in our society that are, just accepted, but are definitely cause inflammation. And I think when people really think about it, they're like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. I mean, smoking, even, chronic alcohol intake, that's inflammatory. I mean, both of those things, nicotine and alcohol, are poison to our body. Definitely, stress, which we can talk about more, but we always have this exposure to things that can cause inflammation. So that's when when we can do our part of sleeping well, eating well, it helps balance that out.
Yeah, it is interesting, the diet piece of it, but also that, the chemicals and additives. What brings to mind is a hairdresser in the past, just the chemicals from, I don't even know if we do perms anymore, but so I'm dating myself, but the odor from a perm and those chemicals, or even coloring hair, those types of things, how that took a toll on her body and she had to step away. So I think really looking at all of the things and how our body responds to it. I mean, the body's not shy about telling us when it's like, this isn't good, danger, danger.
Yes, but I think that sometimes, we're all guilty of this, including myself, of listening to our body, realizing, like I said, like I am tired or I'm not getting enough sleep. We just feel like we've got this big long to-do list. And again, I'm guilty of this too. But realizing if you did rest, I mean, most of our immune system heals itself when cortisol is low at night when we're sleeping. Well, if you're not getting enough sleep, guess what? Your immune system, and then therefore inflammation, is not going to have time to decrease.
Talk too about diet and the foods that contribute to it. It's really interesting that the microbiome and the GI tract and all of that, and how eating the processed frankenfoods and not getting, an apple, a banana, maybe a salad in there, what that does to the lining of our GI tract so that we can't absorb nutrients and we can't. I mean, over time, it really does. I mean, that part, that's definitely a chronic issue, and you're probably seeing a lot of that, especially today.
Definitely. So, I would say, one of the three top causes of chronic inflammation are lipotoxicity, which we can talk about. That's, excess fat cells, adipose tissue, but gut dysbiosis or leaky gut. So we'll definitely, let's talk about that, or just oxidative stress. which we were talking about with the chemicals, free radicals, food sensitivities, food allergies, leaky gut, whatever you want to say what that is a huge, huge cause of chronic inflammation. And I think the tricky part is, even though you could have a leaky gut, which I can talk about what that is a little bit more, it doesn't mean that the inflammation reaction and chemicals that your body produces in inflammation stays in the gut. So say for someone's like, they are sensitive to dairy, but they're like, oh, but I can eat it and I don't get a stomach ache. But it actually, for that person, might be a cause of their arthritis or even their migraines. Because if we've got a leaky gut, which just means that the cells of our GI tract should be really tightly close together. You can kind of think of it as, you know, like bricks in a house, like, so they're really tight together. And then if we eat a food that we're sensitive to, there can be a breakdown of the joining of those cells. And so what happens, like say someone's sensitive to dairy and they drink some milk, that leaky gut, what happens is that a little bit of that milk protein can leak out between the cells of the GI tract, because really the food is supposed to stay inside your gastrointestinal tract. But if it doesn't and it leaks out into your GI tract, your immune system goes, oh, this isn't supposed to be here. We need to increase the immune response to this milk protein. Well, that kind of inflammatory cascade, like I said, it doesn't always have to have GI symptoms. That inflammatory cascade then gets activated throughout the entire body. So that's why, again, food sensitivities, food allergies can cause other reactions besides just stomach ache. And there's a lot of research on the microbiome, the gut microbiome nowadays, and it's kind of a circle in that certain good bacteria produce something called mucin, which is a chemical our body produces to coat our GI tract and protect it. But certain ones of those bacteria can get destroyed with chronic inflammation, and therefore you make less mucin, and then you're more prone to inflammation. So this whole can be a vicious cycle.
Well, that's the thing, is like with food, how it can hurt or heal. And yeah, it's just so interesting how, when you say how the GI tract, intestinal distress, eczema, rashes, headaches. I know if I eat too much dairy, I get real phlegmy and congested. I mean, it's just, it's just really interesting when you stop and think, because it's not just the GI tract, but it's the entire body that it impacts. I think we get stuck on, well, it's just, I'm having a stomach ache. Well, what else is that doing to the rest of the body?
Yeah. And sometimes what happens, people be like, oh yeah, you know, I used to get really bad stomach aches with dairy, and you know, now I don't anymore. But it's that, ooh, what is there? A lot of inflammation. Is it causing inflammation that you just can't see? Probably. And not everybody, I mean, and I'm not saying that, you know, dairy is an issue for people, that for everybody. I mean, certainly there's tests that people can do. There's food sensitivity and food allergy testing. You can determine what food your body might be sensitive to. But there's definitely, and this is going to probably be no surprise, there's definitely certain foods that have been known to increase inflammation in most people. And they're going to be ultra processed foods. And it's, you know, sugar, fried foods, processed meat. I mean, sugar is just a big part of that. So that's probably no surprise. That's certainly a dietary change that people can try to do. And even if they just pick one of those things, like, okay, I'm just, you know, I'm going to try to eat, maybe not cut out sugar because that's so difficult, but I'm going to eat less of that. Well, that will in turn lower inflammation.
We talk about obesity and inflammation, carrying around extra weight. That in and of itself is inflammation. Is that right?
Yeah. And when I was, I keep talking about some of these things with the vicious cycle, the fat cells or adipose cells and inflammation. Oh, they're a big circle, because the fat tissue itself is your cells, and they're not just dormant. They just don't, like, you have fat cells and they just sit there. They actually are metabolic chemically active in the body, and your fat cells do produce chemicals that are inflammatory. You know, diabetes as well as obesity, they're linked to many chronic inflammatory conditions like cardiovascular disease, et cetera. And it goes back somewhat to those fat cells that when we've got acute inflammation, we produce chemicals called cytokines and they fight infection. But fat cells also produce these inflammatory cytokines all the time. So as we have more fat tissue and tissues and it grows, it causes inflammation. Well, more inflammation tends to cause more fat tissue. So it's this, it's this whole vicious circle that goes around and around.
Well, and that's, I think, too, where we're hoping for, you know, is there that little magic pill or magic drink or something that will, and it's like, no, you got to do the work. I mean, it always comes back to the choices that we're making and doing the work. We might need to give up some things. And I know we don't like to do that. We don't, we don't want to give up things, but when you look at your health and your life and how these things can just get more and more debilitating, you got to pick your battle. I mean, I guess if you know what you're doing and you're okay with the inflammation because you don't want to give up whatever that happens to be, at least you know.
Right. It's being informed of it. I was listening to a book recently about, it was all about, sugar. And it was really interesting because it was going back even to the very, very early colonies and different places that, were colonized for the sugar plant, et cetera. It is very, very interesting about how we've increased our consumption of sugar by the pound. It's actually mind-boggling. I should have written down the information. I'm making this up. So if someone fact checks me, I'm totally wrong. So I want to say in the 1700s, average American, maybe 5 pounds of sugar a year. And nowadays, the average American is, eating, I think at the highest point, it was like 115 pounds of white sugar a year. But if you look at that trend of the increase in sugar consumption with the increase in diabetes, heart disease, or cardiovascular disease, obesity, that trend, they parallel one another. So I do think diet, making good choices with your diet, or at least making some changes, in your diet, it really can help some chronic inflammation. And it's hard. I mean, I speak about the sugar thing myself, and that's definitely my weak point, my Achilles heel. And I think about, it goes back to childhood and my grandparents, and that's the way, they showed love in my family of, candy and sweets. So it is easing all of that out. But our diet is a big cause of inflammation.
Well, and sugar seems to be everywhere. I mean, if you think back to like Little House on the Prairie days, I mean, that was, you didn't get sugar unless it was like Christmas time. It's just interesting when you really look back to the history of how our food has progressed or maybe not progressed in some ways. But that's where it comes into reading the labels and taking that accountability and at least know what you're eating or know what you're doing. Seems like it's set up to fail sometimes, our dietary, our foods that are put before us.
Well, and I know we talked about this quite a bit in some of our past radio shows. We were talking about the GLP-1 medications, and so we've touched upon insulin. We want to touch upon that again. Like, insulin is a hormone our body produces and it helps sugar out of the bloodstream, puts it into our cells, like our muscle cells, our liver, so we can use it appropriately. But inflammation, and when I say inflammation, it's this whole process of the chemicals that is produced, the cytokines, et cetera. It stops or drastically reduces the action of insulin. So just inflammation itself, you'll have higher blood sugars, in the bloodstream naturally. So inflammation really can lead to insulin resistance and therefore down the road, possibly diabetes, fatty liver disease. So, yeah, once again, that can be one of those vicious circles as well.
And talk too about stress, because that one wreaks so much havoc. And sometimes we just don't. It's being in that constant kind of fight, flight, or freeze type mode. But sometimes we're in it and we don't realize. We think we're managing it. We think we've got it handled. It's like we maybe even acknowledge this is a real stressful time. Let me just get through this. But it's still taking a toll, even though intellectually we think we have it dialed in. The rest of the body is like, hold my beer. You have no idea.
Yes. Yeah. You know, the stress response is very interesting. There's kind of almost like two different things I can talk about there. In that our brain is what it senses that there's stress. And it's called the hypothalamus pituitary adrenal axis. So our brain is really what senses stress. And it tells your adrenal gland to produce cortisol or not produce cortisol. And one thing that happens, if you have inflammation in your body from a food allergy or say like what we say is called a gut dysbiosis. Say you've got bacteria that are out of balance, or we've got bacteria in our GI tract that are kind of neutral that we all have, but if they overgrow, then they can become pathogenic. But your brain senses all of that. So if you've got inflammation in your body, your brain's going to go, you know, it activates that fight or flight response and it'll produce more cortisol. Well, we all, you know, most of us have heard about some things about cortisol. It certainly can affect our sleep and it can cause some weight gain because one thing cortisol does is it tries to suppress the immune system sometimes. So it might, so say you break your arm, you're going to produce a bunch of cortisol because your body's like, fight or flight. It's going to try to decrease the inflammation of that break at your arm. But all of your focus of your immune system is going right to that break. And it might be at the expense of the other more quiet things your immune system's doing, like being able to fight off the parasites or the viruses, et cetera, that are just in all food that we eat every day. Always this balance. Cortisol itself, like I'll also use this example a lot for people. You know, they do these really interesting tests on people who do ultra marathons or marathons. And when they're running, you know, in the middle of running this marathon, they'll have a huge cortisol spike because that's one way your body goes, you know, run, keep going. Many times afterwards, they might get sick afterwards. They'll catch a cold or a flu because their immune system was used up so much with that immediate fight or flight response. So yeah, chronic stress just changes how we normally keep inflammation under control. It just gets haywire.
Yeah, it's that stress is just, I don't know, some people say, well, it's good stress. I'm like, I don't know that there really is a good stress when it takes a toll on your body. I mean, you know, when we have to get in that urgent, you know, crisis management that may be short term is one thing. The stomach aches, the acid stomach, the headaches, the blood pressure, just all of it. I mean, it can lead to depression. I mean, it does come back to lifestyle, but you have to acknowledge it to begin with. And Lord knows we certainly don't have it dialed in, but, you know, just kind of becoming aware of it does help. And if anything, I think you and I will have conversations where it's like, well, I did it again.
I had the questions, but
I thought I knew better.
Yes, definitely. Well, and there's certain things that cause inflammation that we can't avoid. So, for example, like allergy season, seasonal allergies are ramping up this time of year. Sure, you can, you know, you can have air filters in your home, or I often recommend people, like, even if you have an air filter by your bed at night in the bedroom, and if you've got just clean filtered air when you're sleeping at night, you know, that helps. But another trick that I'll tell people, like, it's going to be hard to avoid, you know, not breathing and therefore, you know, not breathing in the pollens that trigger your seasonal allergies. But during this period of time, if there are some food allergens that you know that you're sensitive to, avoiding those foods and maybe just decreasing the inflammatory load while it's your peak seasonal allergy time frame, that helps. So there are, you know, there are things that we can do, but it's being conscious, like you're saying, like being conscious of it, of aware of it, and deciding to make those, you know, make those choices when you can.
If we're going to test, what type of tests we'd be doing? Doing lab work?
Yeah.
Is there other things maybe where it doesn't involve doing labs, or how does somebody progress? Or like, yeah, I've got some things going on and I'd really like them to stop. How do I get to the root?
There are blood tests or serum tests for general inflammatory conditions. Like one is called CRP, or sometimes it's highly reactive CRP. It's a protein our body produces. And it used to be used a lot to just monitor cardiovascular disease inflammation. But now we're realizing, oh yeah, that, you know, this protein goes everywhere and can be a good marker of how much general inflammation you have in your body. If it's something that's not going to be expensive to run, and people want to get a baseline of where their inflammatory conditions are in your body, that might be something that we test. There's also something called a SED rate that will also measure general inflammation, has to do with the red blood cell. And so sometimes people like to do that, especially like if they're at the beginning of a healthcare journey and they're like, I want some markers to know that my diet changes that I'm doing, you know, that it's having a positive effect. So sometimes it's really helpful to look at those numbers of like, oh yeah, look, in this 3 months, your C-reactive protein came down, your SED rate came down. So yeah, there's definitely those that people can do. And as I mentioned before, if there are genetic diseases in your family, like celiac, Crohn's disease, rheumatoid arthritis, things like that, there are some specific genetic markers that you can do as well. And of course, people can also run specific food sensitivity testing, and certain white blood cell counts will be high with inflammation. Sometimes it's really nice to see that if someone, you know, wants to be motivated to make some changes, and there are things that we can look at for a before and after condition.
Well, I know we've talked heavily too about, and it seems to be the constant aim on all these health issues, you know, is the part that we own in it, you know, our choices and making our improvements, and physical activity, the sleep. Sleep is huge medicine. Yeah. Food is huge medicine if we choose wisely.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean we can't have the cake or whatever on occasion, but just not every day, all day. Exactly. But at the same time, sometimes we do need assistance with medications.
Yeah.
That may be a long-term thing, or it could be a tool to help get the inflammation down so your body can heal. What kind of medications typically are you seeing when it comes to inflammation? I guess there's probably a long list or things, but most common.
And I don't recommend, you know, doing, it kind of depends, are we talking like a short-term use, long-term use, like, you know, inflammation for arthritis or like an acute injury. Obviously, people can do over-the-counter ibuprofen, aspirin, you know, et cetera. They really are good at reducing short-term inflammation and pain. Again, you know, as a naturopath, one of our defining principles is when we can, you know, try to treat the cause of the disease. Well, someone doesn't have a ibuprofen deficiency. There's a reason that they need, you know, they're needing that ibuprofen to decrease the inflammation. So we're always trying to find the cause. If it's a big acute inflammatory condition, there always are things like prednisone and corticosteroids, they're called, but you know, they have their issues too. But there's certainly more gentler natural anti-inflammatories that many people will add in. If they can't do it dietary wise, you can certainly supplement with things like fish oil, alpha lipoic acid, curcumin, or turmeric is a popular one right now. And it's as it should be. It's been shown to decrease inflammation and over again. There's certain herbs like ginger and garlic and cayenne that have also been shown to be natural anti-inflammatories. So just like we were talking about the foods that if you really think about it, you're like, oh yeah, these probably are inflammatory, like sugar, processed meat. There's a lot of foods that have been shown to also be anti-inflammatory, like olive oil, you know, leafy green vegetables, fatty fish. Again, you could take a fish oil pill or supplement, but salmon, sardines, nuts, fruits, plants, they're all have been shown over and over again to be, you know, anti-inflammatory. Oftentimes people ask, well, what diet should I do? It could be very individual depending on what the person has going on. But the studies for the Mediterranean diet, which is high in olive oil, leafy green fish, is probably the one that overall shows the most promise as an anti-inflammatory diet.
It's just really interesting how, you know, the more that you and I talk about obesity, inflammation, things like that, that it just really comes down to food, diet, lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it just really puts a big spotlight on it. And then when somebody is working on inflammation, like, okay, mm-hmm. whether it's weight, maybe achy joints mm-hmm. and things like that, the food, how often, other than the noticeable, like, wow, I'm not sneezing anymore, or I'm not congested,
yeah.
or the aches have gone away, how often should somebody maybe run their labs again, or mm-hmm. how do we measure that?
That's a great question. Sometimes it depends. What I like to do is, if they would do a blood draw, we find out, oh yeah, you know, your CRP's high, or dead rate's elevated. I like to check back in with them in like 12 weeks, like 3 months. And usually our plan is to do some labs at that point, and we can get a good indicator of what's going on. Now, sometimes I'll check in with someone and they're like, oh, you know, this happened. I really haven't been able to implement these changes. We won't do it at that time. But if someone's motivated making some lifestyle changes, and I really feel like sleep is such an underrated anti-inflammatory, you know, usually 3 months is definitely enough time for us to be like, okay, we're on the right direction. And it's motivating. You know, you get that report back and it's like, wow, okay, my cholesterol went, you know, down 30 points, or, you know, all of that. I think it helps keep us, you know, really, really motivated. Another underutilized test that is becoming more popular, but I definitely want to mention, is related to, it's called an EBT scan, or a cardiac calcium score. And what it does is it's a CT scan that measures plaquing or calcification that you might have in your carotid arteries or the arteries of your heart. Why that's so helpful is I have tons of patients who have, say they have high cholesterol, and it's kind of genetic, but they're healthy, they eat really well. I'm like, hey, let's do one of these cardiac calcium scores. And many of those folks don't have any plaquing or calcifications in their artery. And what that means is, say you've got calcifications or plaques inside your artery wall, well, that's going to make that artery narrower. You can think about it, you know, as like a pipe in your house. If there's gunk in there, then it's harder for the blood to get through. You know, that's what leads to heart attacks and strokes, etc. So if one reason you get that plaquing in your arteries is due to inflammation, those artery walls become sticky. And so when the cholesterol passes through, it sticks to the inside of the artery wall. And if it sits there long enough, your body calcifies it and kind of holds it there. That's a great test to do, even for people too that have normal. I've also had the opposite. People have normal cholesterol levels, but they're like, you know, my blood pressure is going up or something like that. And they've got high inflammation markers. Well, they might have a bunch of plaquing, because any cholesterol that's going through their body is sticking to those walls and can cause this narrowing of the artery. So there's all kinds of etc. that we can do. And, you know, again, it involves taking an individual approach at people's health, see what they have going on. Because you could spend thousands and thousands of dollars on tests.
And you don't realize how bad you were feeling until you do start feeling good. And we've said it before, just take your body on like it's a science project. And there's so many contributing factors to things. So it's not always going to be just one thing, but it does come back to, you know, you just got to do your part.
Yes, you just have to do your part and look at it in it's also attitude, you know, looking at it in a good way of like, this is good for me to do. So sure, you're doing a sugar detox, you might be, you know, grumpy for a few days, but if you really think about it, and then you're like, oh my gosh, I'm feeling so much better. You know, it's worth it.
Yeah, the withdrawals may not be too great in the beginning when you're coming off of sugar and all the white stuff.
Yep.
But just give it a couple days. Lots of water.
Yep. It's temporary. It's all temporary. And like, you just know, having this knowledge, like we're talking today, of like, oh, you know, these are some things that could be going on internally without knowing about it. Well, just seeing that knowledge is power of, oh, well, okay, these are maybe some lifestyle choices I should do differently, you know, in order to prevent disease. It's all about prevention when you can.
This is good stuff. Michelle, where can we go to find you, reach out to you? Are you still accepting new patients or?
Yes. No, I'm still accepting new patients. I know I usually tell people that my goal is to get you feeling better so you don't have to see me. So, you know, I'm definitely accepting new patients. The easiest way to reach me is to go on my website, which is drjacksonnd.com. That's got all my information on there. That's probably the easiest.
Nope, inflammation. Yeah. It's we're not supposed to be inflamed. And
no.
I don't think we realize that. Like, oh, I'm not supposed to feel this way. No, you're not.
Yeah, exactly. We get used to it. It's, again, it's that getting used to it. And then you need to sit back and be like, oh, I don't actually think I need to feel this way.
Like, no, you don't. Let's get you healthy. Well, Michelle, yeah. I really appreciate this.
This has been fun, as always.
Well, again, Dr. Jackson, I appreciate your time and your expertise. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, Dawn. Have a great one.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Dawn Newton Podcast. And a special thank you to my guest, Dr. Michelle Jackson, joining us and sharing such valuable insights on chronic inflammation. If you found this helpful, make sure to follow the show, leave us a quick review, and share it with someone who could benefit. More information on Dr. Michelle Jackson can be found at drjacksonnd.com. And be sure and check out my website, dawnnewton.com. The Dawn Newton Podcast is written, produced, and hosted by Dawn Newton.